प्रथमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं तथो जायमुदीरे यद्नास्ताप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भागवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। Dehena,
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 Rajan,
Rajan,
Dehat,
Dehat,
Deha,
Deha,
Abhijayate,
Abhijayate,
Bijat,
Bijat,
Eva,
Eva,
Yata,
Yata,
Bijam,
Bijat,
Dehi,
Dehi,
Artha,
Artha,
Eva,
Eva,
Shashvata,
Shashvata,
Dehena Dehino Rajan
Dehena Dehino Rajan
Dehena Dehino Rajan
Dehena Dehino Rajan
Deha Deho Vijayate
Deha Deho Vijayate
Vijari Vayata
Vijam
Vijariva yata bijam
Deyata
iva shashvata Deyata iva shashvata Dehena dehino rajan Deha deho vijayate Vijare vayata bijam Deyata iva shashvata
Dehena dehino rajan
Dehena dehino rajan
Dehata deho vijayate
Dehata deho vijayate
Vijare vayata bijam
Of the Father,
possessing a material body.
Rajan,
O
King,
Dehat,
from the body of the mother.
Deha,
another body.
Abhijayate,
takes birth.
Bijat,
from one seed.
Eva,
indeed.
Yata,
just as.
Bijam,
another seed.
Dehi,
a person who has accepted a material body.
Artha,
the material elements.
Eva,
like.
Shashvata,
eternal. Translation. As from one seed, another seed is generated, O King. So from one body, the body of the Father, through another body, the body of the Mother, a third body is generated, the body of a Son. As the elements of the material body are eternal, the living entity who appears through these material elements is also eternal. Purport. From Bhagavad Gita we understand that there are two energies, namely the superior energy and inferior energy. Inferior energy consists of the five gross and three subtle material elements. The living entity who represents the superior energy appears in different types of bodies through these elements by the manipulation or supervision of the material energy. Actually, both the material and spiritual energies, matter and spirit, exist eternally as potencies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The potent entity is the Supreme Person. Since the spiritual energy, the living being, who is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, desires to enjoy this material world, the Lord gives him a chance to accept different types of material bodies and enjoy or suffer in different material conditions. Factually, the spiritual energy, the living entity, who desires to enjoy material things, is manipulated by the Supreme Lord. The so-called father and mother have nothing to do with the living entity. As a result of his own choice and karma, the living being takes different bodies through the agency of so-called fathers and mothers.
Do you want this class to have some Prabhupada pastimes? I didn't know. It wasn't planned.
Anyway, some of the devotees have asked to hear some more about Srila Prabhupada, so I guess pastimes of Prabhupada are eternally fresh, they're ever new, so I probably will be repeating some things I've said in these classes before, but I can relate some pastimes. Is that all right? Is that appropriate? Okay. What time is the class finished? Okay. So, in the context of this verse, we can say that Prabhupada came to the West to establish real spirituality, to create, as he says, a revolution in consciousness. As ordinarily, we know that people think this material body and the living energy which drives it is material, that it comes from a material father and mother, and it itself is material, that matter generates matter, and that we are a result of a biological process, that our consciousness, our brain, and all is biological. As we read here, this is not actually the case, that the living entity has actually nothing to do with the material energy, although he's in a marginal condition. So Prabhupada's purpose in bringing Krishna consciousness to the West was to establish this principle that we are spirit and there actually is God, to bring God to a godless society. And he often spoke out very directly that this is a godless civilization. So to understand God, first of all, he used to say that I am not this body. And when this first basic spiritual truth is grasped, then it is possible for people to understand who God is beyond the mundane concepts of religion. I just saw one 16th century painting representation of God. There's a picture of Jesus, and then behind him in a big throne with a big helmet sat an old man with a beard. God. So, because in the West people have become very pessimistic about religion, Prabhupada's coming to the West was very refreshing in many ways. He wasn't presenting the same old God who kept a balance sheet of good and bad behavior, who was very cruel sometimes, and it was always beyond our understanding or impotent to directly come and be visible to us or to act within the material world, but a very living concept of God through a living personality who was fully realized. And in this way, even those who had become agnostic or atheistic, and I was definitely in that category when I met Prabhupada, it revived my belief that there was a God and that God was actually good. In the modern world, many people think that God is, maybe he's there, but he's not necessarily all-powerful or even all-good. So this revolution in consciousness is to establish really who God is, that God is a person. And this is what Prabhupada did. In the very beginning, he always spoke about Krishna and loving Krishna and about Krishna's pastimes, his qualities, and all of his various forms and names. And the whole rich culture of Krishna consciousness came with Prabhupada. From the day he came, he was cooking prasadam and offering it to the public and quoting very adroitly from Vedic literature and speaking of the wonderful culture that existed in Vedic civilization. So when Prabhupada first came, as you know, he was in a very poverty-stricken condition, and this continued for the first year or so, maybe year and a half. And my first contact with him was through an introduction to a friend. I'd been dabbling in various spiritual writings, and I'd read the Bhagavad Gita, but I didn't really understand what it meant. I didn't understand why they had to fight this war, how this was religious, and I asked different people, and everyone gave a different answer. People said it was symbolic. This means that you have to fight out your life. Somebody else said another thing. It was very unclear. So when I went up to see Prabhupada, there was a class going on, and he actually was chanting at first when I went there. And just before I'd gone to see Prabhupada, not just before, but a few months before, I'd gone to see a Swami in a yoga society, a Vedanta society, and he was sitting in the back of the room. And it was very difficult to understand him. Almost everyone who was there was over 60 years old. And men were sitting in big leather chairs, smoking pipes. And the ladies were there to learn something about how to do yoga and reduce their weight and so on. So it was a very discouraging situation because the whole thing was completely incomprehensible. And none of the people were serious about spiritual life. So when I first saw Prabhupada, it was a completely different experience. He was very accessible. He was right up close. It was just a little bare room. There were no chairs even, just a bare light bulb hung from the ceiling. And a few young hippie types were sitting there on the floor. Prabhupada sat on this wooden platform. There was probably something the artist who used there had his subjects sit on when he was posing them to paint. So Prabhupada sat on this big bare platform, and he was chanting with a little drum like this, a little African drum. So I sat down and just stared at him very intently. And because of his age and the gravity and the intensity of his expression, I was very immediately attracted. He was wearing glasses, spectacles, and he had the look of somebody very learned. And we were all sitting just a few feet away from him, so we were right there. It was not at all like the other swamis that I'd gone to hear lecture. They were always very far back of the room. They were very difficult to hear. There were a lot of people, but this was just four or five people. So I thought I was really entering into some kind of a special, almost mystical experience. This big dark room, almost, it was about the size of the temple room here, with a one, just this one light bulb and right over Prabhupada. And he was wearing a turtleneck like this pullover. And so I began to chant, and just, I wasn't sure what the words were, I just kind of followed along. And others were joining, a few people had little finger cymbals. So then it went on for about a half hour. And after it stopped, he spoke in Sanskrit, we didn't know what it was. And then he began to speak. And in, as Bhakti Chumaraj was saying yesterday, I was also feeling just so overwhelmed by the whole experience that for the first 10 minutes or so, I didn't hear anything he said at all. I was just looking at him and kind of hearing the sound and looking around a little bit, but I was trying to understand who he was and why he was there and what he was. And I was trying to just absorb the whole vibration. And I was feeling a very warm feeling, very special, inexplicable sensation, very great attraction to Prabhupada. So it kind of blotted out my thinking about what he was saying. And then he began to repeat the same phrase, "I am not this body." And he would always say it with great vigor, "I am not this body. I am not this body," in different ways, but always with great intensity. And because he was saying it in the first person, I immediately accepted that he knew that he wasn't his body. But I didn't know exactly what that meant. It was a very strange concept. But somehow I knew that that for him, at least, it must be true. And this just stuck in my mind. I kept turning it over in my mind. Not this body. What does that mean? How can you not be your body? And the Prabhupada kept saying, and then he would speak about Krishna. And the way he said Krishna, he said it with such a deep conviction, with such a feeling of love in his tone, that I knew that he actually had some special relationship with Krishna, even though I didn't really know who Krishna was. But because of his dedication and the way in which he just said Krishna and expressed his love for Krishna, I knew that this was something very real and very special. And without even realizing it, all of a sudden I became a theist again. I mean, I hadn't become an atheist, but I was definitely an agnostic. I didn't think any religions had any answers, and I didn't really know for sure if there was God, and if there was, what was God's power, who he was. But suddenly I knew there was God, just by Prabhupada's presence, his conviction, and the weight of his personality. And not only that, but hearing the philosophy, which began to make sense little by little, I knew there was something very deep about it, even though I didn't fully understand it. So after speaking, and then I wanted to ask, he asked if there's any questions. So I was pretty much of a mundane materialist, and he'd been talking about the spiritual platform, which I didn't understand at all what it meant. So I said, "What if you're walking down the street and you see an old man being beat up by a young man? What should you do? Should you interfere, or should you just ignore it and walk on?" So Prabhupada said, "First you have to understand the spiritual platform. You have to see everything from the spiritual platform, and only then can you decide what is the right thing to do." And then he started explaining the difference between the spiritual platform and the material platform. And it was getting very technical, but I was beginning to understand. So at the end of the answer, I said, "So what would you do?" So Prabhupada again began to speak very, very high philosophy about the spiritual platform, the difference between the material and spiritual energies. And it was all very inspiring, but at the end again, I felt that I wanted him to give me a direct answer. And I was going to say it again, "So what would you do?" And then I thought that I better not say that. I'd better just try to understand what he said and think about it for a while before I challenge. So I felt that I wasn't completely satisfied, but that I really had to think more about it. And later on, as I began to think after the class, I began to think what a foolish question it was, and I began to feel very embarrassed that I had tried to pinpoint him and put him on the spot, because gradually it all began to make sense, and it seemed an absolutely foolish thing to ask, because without knowing the circumstances, it just wouldn't make any sense. You couldn't possibly know what to do if you didn't know the whole circumstance behind a situation like that. And unless you were really a spiritually advanced person, you would never know how to act in an awkward situation. So then I began to realize that Prabhupada was coming from such a high platform that I really couldn't comprehend it in the beginning, and that I was being very foolish trying to bring the spiritual philosophy down to a very awkward, mundane situation. So then after the class was over, I just felt, we chanted again. There was some chanting. Again, I tried to follow along. But I was more interested in the philosophy. The chanting was nice, but I wanted to really know the truth. I wanted to know what was all behind it. So I afterwards went up to Prabhupada, and because I liked the music very much, but I didn't really know how to ask him about philosophy. I felt I'd ask my question, so I felt I'd just make some offering about the chant. So I said, I have a tambura at home. And he looked up and he had this big smile. He says, oh, bring it. Just like that. And I was very surprised, because I didn't think he would be very interested at all, or I thought if he was interested, he wouldn't express much joy about it. But he looked up and just gave this huge smile. Like a little child, I thought, and so bring it. So then he asked me what I did, and I told him I was a musician, and then he asked me where I worked, what I did a little bit, a few questions, and then he said, do you want to come to my classes? And I said, yes. And he said, well, we have classes now Monday, Wednesday, and Friday night, every evening at the same time, 7 o'clock. And why don't you come and bring your tambura next time? So I said, okay, yes, I'll do that. And then he was just looking at me, big smile on his face, and I began to feel very embarrassed that I had come to speak with him, and I had nothing more to say other than I had a tambura and that some very mundane questions and answers about, or mundane answers anyway, you know, about what I was doing. And then I felt I felt foolish that I just there was nothing more I could think of to say, that here I was before such a great personality, and all I could talk about was such mundane things. I wanted to talk to him, but I couldn't think of anything that would sound intelligent to say after that. So I just felt, you know, it's time to go. So then I excused myself, and he said, "Be sure and come back next class." And between that and the next time I went, one of the people there, his name was Carl. He'd had some of Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada had all of his books on a shelf in that place. And he was really, like, pushing the books. He said, you should get these books. These books are really good. And I wasn't thinking so much about books. I didn't even know there were books. I just thought there was Prabhupada. I said, no, you'll like these books. And he said, why don't you... He's like the first book distributor or something, you know. He kept saying, you should get these books. You can get them directly from Swamiji. I said, really? I said, yeah. I said, and they're only $18. And I said, really? He said, $18 for 3 books. I said, well, I don't know if I want to get all 3 of them. I don't know if I'll read them all. So, well, you can just give $6 at a time. You don't have to pay all at once. So, said, but you can, but he'll give you all 3 books if you just give him $6. So next time I came, I was prepared to get the set of books, and I gave Prabhupada directly $6. And I told him that Carl told me I could get all three books if I just paid $6 at a time. So he was very, very jolly. I wasn't really sure what these books were, you know, I was kind of hesitant. I didn't know if I was going to get $18 worth of philosophy or not. I wasn't sure what I was getting into. So anyway, I got the three books. And I had them with me. And so I started to read the Srimad Bhagavatam. And I started reading at home, the first volume. This is, I think, I started reading after the second class. And I was just amazed right from the very beginning. I'd never seen anything like it. And I just couldn't stop reading the book. I started reading one day, and I just didn't stop the whole day. And then I had to go out and go shopping, so I just took the book with me. I was reading it down the stairs, and I remember very clearly reading it. I was walking down the street. I'd come to a traffic light, and I'd, you know, start reading the book. I'd look up, see if it changed, and I'd walk across the street reading the book. I get to the other side, and I was reading the book. And I waited for the bus, reading the book. I got on the bus. I was reading it the whole time. And on the bus, I remember I was reading this section about Kali Yuga, how in Kali Yuga people are misguided, unlucky, unfortunate. And he was giving all the symptoms of Kali Yuga, and I was thinking, there's never anything like this ever been written. That this is the absolute truth. You know, as I started to read more, this is actually the complete philosophy of life. And I was just stunned. I was like overcome by some feeling that I just found something I was looking for my whole life. I was practically shuddering. I mean, I knew that I just have to read these books all the way through. I couldn't stop. I get to the other side, and I was reading the book. And I waited for the bus, reading the book. I got on the bus. I was reading it the whole time. And on the bus, I remember I was reading this section about Kali Yuga, how in Kali Yuga people are misguided, unlucky, unfortunate. And he was giving all the symptoms of Kali Yuga. And I was thinking, there's never anything like this ever been written. That this is the absolute truth. You know, as I started to read more, this is actually the complete philosophy of life. I was just stunned. I was like overcome by some feeling that I just found something I was looking for my whole life. I was practically shuddering. I mean, I knew that I just have to read these books all the way through. I couldn't stop. And then I began to think that this is what Prabhupada is. He's this philosophy, and that's perfect. It's actually got all the answers in it. So then I started thinking that Prabhupada is actually has brought the perfect philosophy, and he must be the perfect teacher, therefore. So I just kept reading, and you know, I just finished. And then when I went back to Prabhupada, I was completely enlivened. I was just very excited, enthusiastic about everything he said. And I wanted to learn Sanskrit. So on the third visit, I asked him if we could learn Sanskrit. So, but he said we were having these classes on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, but if you want Sanskrit, you have to have it another day. So he said, well, how about Saturday? I said, okay, it will have to be in the morning. So then it was decided that we were going to have a Sanskrit class, and all the people there were going to learn Sanskrit. So on Saturday, we got in this little blackboard, It was a little crumbling around the edges, I remember. It was put up on an easel, and Prabhupada was standing up this time, giving a formal Sanskrit class. And I bought a book about Sanskrit, you know, how to make all the characters, all the grammar. First Lessons in Sanskrit Grammar, it was called, by Judith Tybert. That's how I found this book. So I was practicing how to make all the letters. And then Prabhupada was up there with his chalk, and there were about five of us there. Everyone had a little notebook, and he was showing us how to make the letters. He'd make a letter, we'd write it down, he'd erase it, he'd make another letter, we'd write it down, he would erase it. And then he wrote on the board, Ishvara Parama Krishna, Satchidananda Vigraha, Nadi Radhi Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. And he had us pronounce this very carefully. He was explaining what the long A and the short A is, and we would recite one syllable, and then he'd recite one, we'd recite one, and then he went through the whole verse, one syllable at a time, then one word at a time. And then he would do the whole line, and then we started memorizing this verse. And then he gave the explanation of the verse, word by word. Krishna is the supreme controller, and his knowledge is bliss, eternal knowledge and bliss. He's the cause of all causes. And he began to explain what it meant. So without realizing it, we were getting a whole other philosophy lesson. He was just explaining what these words meant. We learned who Govinda was, and he was giving a little explanation, Nadi Radhi Govinda, that he's the first progenitor, and we were finding out, you know, why Krishna was the cause of all causes. He gave a little explanation about that. So the Sanskrit class lasted maybe an hour, hour and a half. And later on, this is going ahead a little, but this is interesting. I really liked the sound of this. I loved the Sanskrit, so I always remembered this verse in Sanskrit. I was talking to Prabhupada in his room about going to California, and I was encouraging him, you know, I said that there's a lot of people in that part of the country. This was in New York, so I said, that are very interested in spiritual life, and they're very curious to know about God. And then somehow I just quoted this verse. I don't know why, but it just came out, the whole verse. Prabhupada had been sitting there listening, kind of matter-of-fact, and all of a sudden he just burst in this huge smile. And he just started looking at me. Like, he was so pleased. And I didn't even know why I said it. It just kind of popped out. Somehow it was the context wasn't even clear. And then the whole conversation just stopped. And I stopped looking at Prabhupada, and I couldn't understand why he was looking at me like that. And I just realized he must be very pleased that I learned this verse in Sanskrit. And I really felt so warm because, you know, most teachers, I always tried to be kind of a serious student when I was in school and the university, and I used to take piano lessons, and I always had like a real, try to have a kind of personal relationship with the teacher, but it was ultimately not very rewarding. But here I found Prabhupada was so pleased that I learned this one little thing, just these four lines of Sanskrit. And I realized that it was actually a very... relationship was a very reciprocal one, not one of, you know, you're the student and I'm the teacher, and I'm just going to teach you, and I don't really care about you. But this is something where I realized that Prabhupada actually had a real feeling for me as a person. And he wasn't just teaching something mundane, but something that when I was learning a little, he became very happy, very enlivened. So I began at that time to understand the importance of what Prabhupada was teaching. That it wasn't just something for himself, but he was getting as much joy out of the experience as we were. So, anyway, getting back to the classes, these were in the Bowery in Second Avenue. As Bhakti Tru kind of told a little about the story, Prabhupada had an incident with the boy who owned this loft that he lived in. It was called a loft. It was a big bare room, not even a flat or an apartment, a loft. So, I was sleeping about, I don't know, 6 in the morning, and the phone rang, and it was Carl. And he said, Swamiji and I were just out taking a walk. We thought we'd come and see you. I said, what do you mean? It's 6 o'clock in the morning. We're just out taking a walk at 6 in the morning? Isn't that a little strange? And he said, well, not really. He gets up very early, and we just thought we'd come up and see you. He wanted to see you. So I really couldn't say no. I said, it's really early, but she really wants to, I guess. It's all right. So, Prabhupada, and he were at the door and brought them upstairs and sat down in the front part. I had also had a loft, but it was a little fixed up, made it into an apartment. And there was a couch right in the front, and the television had been on all night. So we sat down, I asked Prabhupada to sit down. I sat on the couch, and Carl was there sitting on one side, one end. Prabhupada was in the middle, and I was at the other end. And this television was going, and Prabhupada started, we just started talking. Carl was saying that they were out. It was a nice morning and so on. And they said, but we have a problem. And this boy, Paul, I think he has another name in the Lilamrita. His actual name is Paul, but for legal reasons we had to give his other name. So he said that he's been causing problems. And so Prabhupada said that Prabhupada had told him not to leave the soap in the shower. It was dangerous. But he kept doing it. So Prabhupada got a little heavy with it. I said, you must not do this anymore. And then he became very angry with me. So, and I kind of looked at Prabhupada and looked at Carl and looked back and forth to try to understand what this meant. And somehow I wasn't understanding the gravity of the situation, you know. So I got a little bit angry, but what was, you know, the problem? So then Prabhupada looked right at me and he said, he's a very dangerous man. So then I thought, oh, this is getting a little serious now. So he said, in India we have a saying that you take a spiritual master and you sit across from him and you learn many lessons from him. Then as soon as you think you know the lessons, you immediately kill him. Then you move his dead body aside and you sit in his place and you become the guru. So then I began to think about that a little bit. And then, because he just said he's a very dangerous man, and then I began to realize that somehow he's like a life-threatening person. This is a real heavy thing. And Carl kind of said, yes, Prabhupada has to move from there right away. So, and Prabhupada just was very, very grave. And then he was looking over at this television, and there were cartoons on. And he said, so this is nonsense. That's very great. This is nonsense. And all of a sudden I looked up at the television and I said, oh yes, this is nonsense. So I got up and turned it off, not even realizing it was on, how ridiculous it was. So then Carl looked at me. Again, he gave a real heavy look and said, we have to help Swamiji. So then I thought, oh, this is pretty serious. This whole thing is going a little wacko over there on the Bowery. So I said, well, I'll do everything I can to help. And I started looking around my place, and I was thinking, well, maybe he wants to stay here. But I wasn't at all ready for that. I had people coming over. I had the place was full of musical instruments, and I just couldn't imagine that Prabhupada would come here. My whole existence would turn into a classroom with him lecturing, and my whole way of life would be changed. So I was a little worried, but then I thought, well, somehow we'll have to do something. So I told them that I tried to arrange something, I'd do whatever I could. And Carl said that he would stay at his house for the time being, but we immediately had to find a place. So they left, and I think within a day or so, Prabhupada started staying over at Carl's. And so I went out to get a newspaper to see about finding a little flat or something. I wasn't sure. And then I thought we'd get a storefront, a shop right on the ground level. So I think it was just that one or two days after, I went down to the newspaper. This was the Village Voice. It was kind of a hippie newspaper then, East Village. And I wanted to get the first one that came off the press, because they have places in that area advertised, but you have to get them immediately because they're sold especially the same day. They're all rented. So I went down to the very first newsstand it comes to, immediately went into the phone booth, started phoning, and made an appointment to go see the place. This was on 26th Second Avenue. So we went down there, and Carl and I got there before Prabhupada came. Somehow Prabhupada came a little bit later. But no, that's right, I got there first, and then Prabhupada and Carl came separately. So I met the man, was talking with him, told him all about Prabhupada. He was a great spiritual teacher and a great scholar and so on, and that we want to use this for a little lecturing place. And he said he had an apartment in the back, and he was very friendly, very nice. Mr. Gardner was his name. It was in the summer, and he was kind of in a sports shirt. Very friendly guy, American. So I built up, you know, about Prabhupada, who he was. He was a very distinguished person. He wants to give classes here. It had been this shop, this matchless gift. So the time Prabhupada and Carl came along, he was already warmed up, and he met Prabhupada. So I'm very honored to meet you. And we went and sat down in this storefront on a little ledge. There were no chairs there. And we've all sat in a row on this ledge. And we discussed about the place. So we were talking about the rent and the place in the back, and we all thought this is very good. Prabhupada could have an apartment in the back. And man was very cordial with Prabhupada. And so it was going to be $100 a month. And then Prabhupada said, I'm asking people to become members of our society. And everyone who's a trustee, these boys, they're trustees. Carl and Michael, they pay $20 a month for our society, and I would also like you to be a trustee of our society. But instead of paying $20 a month, you can just deduct it from our monthly rent. So he said, okay, that sounds fine.
Yeah.
He said, actually, I'm very honored. So he agreed. And then Prabhupada immediately pulled out the set of the Bhagavatams. And he said, I want to give you this as a trustee of our society, which is actually a very nice gesture, you know. I mean, because the books were worth that much anyway. But, of course, he would get the deduction every month. So Prabhupada wrote in the book, signed his name. And the man was just, he was like, almost flabbergasted. He was so honored. So, thank you. It's very, very kind of you. Really, I'm so honored to get these books. You know, started looking through them. So that was the deal. And we left, you know, it was very happy. Prabhupada was very pleased. So then we arranged that he was going to have and then he said, but I want to paint this apartment for you before you move in. So you have to give me a few days. I want to make it nice and clean for you. And he wasn't going to charge anything. He painted the whole thing, new coat of paint. And it was very, very clean when Prabhupada moved in. So Prabhupada asked me to have the electricity and gas put in. He said, but you should not pay any money, no deposit. So I went down there and tried to get it without a deposit. I couldn't do it, though. They said, well, we have no exceptions. You have to make a deposit. So somehow, I don't remember how this happened, but Prabhupada himself ended up going down to this office. It was nearby the apartment, and convinced them not to charge a deposit. He thought that I was very... He said, you could not get them to not give the deposit? I said, no. He said, I just kind of went like this. And I will have to go. So I couldn't understand, you know, how he did it. I was amazed that Prabhupada did this. So I was beginning to understand that Prabhupada had some very unusual mystic power, that he could do these things. So... when Prabhupada moved from the Bowery, nobody had a car. That was about 1 mile, at least 3/4 of a mile. It's a pretty long distance. So about 8 followers came over, and we just started picking things up and walking down the stairs. And it was all done in one move. We figured out how many people were needed. And... Prabhupada had a typewriter, he had a tape recorder, and manuscripts, and you know, things had accumulated, cooking materials. So it's quite a bit, and he had things in suitcases. And I remember once we got down the street, Prabhupada was even carrying some of the suitcases part of the time. It was like a big safari. People were carrying things in their heads, and I had this big tape recorder on my shoulder. And that's how the move was done to Second Avenue. There's one other incident I want to relate before we leave the Bowery. I guess this is probably the last one, but I went to see Prabhupada alone once after I'd been to some classes because I just wanted to have some personal association with him outside of the formality of the class. But I couldn't get into the building. There was no bell. I would knock on the door. There was no answer. This was during the daytime. So I didn't know what to say. So I started shouting, "Paul," he's the boy who lived there. Nobody answered. And there's traffic rumbling down this Bowery. Probably couldn't even hear. So then I started throwing coins up to the windows, four stories up. And I threw a few pennies up and finally hit the window. And all of a sudden, Prabhupada was head out the window. And I was very, very embarrassed because I wanted Paul to answer the door. And all of a sudden, you know, here I was throwing pennies and yelling out the window and throwing coins up there. And Prabhupada looked out and saw me. So he just kind of nodded like that. And I thought, uh-oh. Now I've done it. So, and then Prabhupada came to the door. He went down all the stairs, and I was feeling more embarrassed because I made him climb down all the stairs. I guess, you know, Paul wasn't, I thought that maybe Paul wasn't there. I think I asked him, "Paul's not here," and he said, "No." So I said, "Come on." So then it was even worse because he had to climb all the stairs. And I followed behind him, and I really felt low. I had to make him climb all the stairs, and I was following up behind the stairway. So he was very, very congenial. He asked me to sit down. And then he started asking me a little about myself. And I was told him that I was a musician, and I worked in bands, and I sometimes wrote music. And a little more, he said, "That is very good. You must learn how to play this music for Krishna. And you can even play the piano for Krishna." And I was wondering, how can you do that? It didn't make any sense. He said, I can teach you. And I just couldn't understand how that could be. But anyway, I told him that I wanted to go to India sometime. And then I started asking about some of the Indian... Then he started giving me the whole history of India and was explaining how actually these politicians were all rascals. And I was amazed because he gave such a kind of behind-the-scenes history of things that went on in India. And I was completely amazed, sort of one thing after the other. And of course, I didn't exactly come to talk about that, but he saw that that's what I was interested in. So he spoke in such a way that I was very enthralled with hearing all this kind of behind-the-scenes history of India. So then I could see that he was actually very more interested, or at least as much interested in myself as I was interested in him. And again, I began to feel very embarrassed that here I am coming to learn something, and he's just asking me about myself and what I'm doing. And he was appealing to me to help him in some way. Get his manuscripts done and just help him with his mission. So I could see that actually Prabhupada was very, very intent on doing what he came to do for his spiritual master, and that everyone he came into contact with, he wanted to help. And that somehow, if I was to continue with him, that I would become part of this whole mission to help him. But at the same time, I didn't feel I was being... Then he started giving me the whole history of India and was explaining how actually these politicians were all rascals. And I was amazed because he gave such a kind of behind-the-scenes history of things that went on in India, and I was completely amazed, sort of one thing after the other. And of course, I didn't exactly come to talk about that, but he saw that that's what I was interested in. So he spoke in such a way that I was very enthralled with hearing all this kind of behind-the-scenes history of India. So then I could see that he was actually very more interested, or at least as much interested in myself as I was interested in him. And again, I began to feel very embarrassed that here I am coming to learn something, and he's just asking me about myself and what I'm doing, and he was appealing to me to help him in some way, get his manuscripts done and just help him with his mission. So I could see that actually Prabhupada was very, very intent on doing what he came to do for his spiritual master, and that everyone he came into contact with, he wanted to help, and that somehow if I was to continue with him, that I would become part of this whole mission to help him. But at the same time, I didn't feel I was being pressured. I felt that Prabhupada would only have me do as much as I could actually do, as he was trying to understand who I was and what I was. So I went away from there thinking that actually Prabhupada is so gentle that he will never force anybody, but yet he wants nothing in the world more than to serve his spiritual master and actually establish Krishna consciousness in the United States. I knew he had great, great ambitions, but that he was so gentle he would never force someone like myself, who wasn't really ready to surrender at all at the time, to do it. So I went away feeling very secure in my relationship with Prabhupada and actually feeling very desirous to help him because of his nature. So anyway, that was the kind of beginning. And then later on he asked us to help him put on the first love feast in Second Avenue, which was a very, very successful thing. Anyway, that's just a little drop of the ocean of Prabhupada. Had his association, and is definitely Prabhupada's great spiritual stature and energy that is sustaining our movement through over the years. So anyway, thank you all for listening. Sorry we don't have more time, but it's actually an eternal pastime glorifying Prabhupada. Never really ends. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.